Welcome. We're glad you've joined us for this Hand in Hand podcast. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we provide information, classes, training, and lots of support for parents like you. We call our approach Parenting by Connection, and it's based on the insight that you deserve good support as you parent, and every child needs lots of connection in order to thrive. We offer tools to help you foster support for yourself and connection in your family. We hope this podcast gives you exactly the kind of support you're looking for.
Welcome to our call on helping children with fears. My name is Michelle Coquel, and I'm here with Shaheen Murali. And we're going to dive into sort of the meat of this call in a few minutes. First, Shaheen's going to give you a brief introduction on hand-in-hand parenting and tell you a little bit about the types of support that's available to you as you navigate all the complexities of raising your children and being with your grandchildren. So, Shaheen?
Great. Thank you. Thanks, Michelle. So, hello, everyone. Welcome to all of you. We want to just thank you because we know your time is really precious and especially how challenging parenting can be. We can hear in the background there were some kids and log on, you know, with your kids around and everything just shows how dedicated you guys are to learning more. So thank you again for taking time out of your busy day to join us. We'd really like to support your work in parenting and we hope to give you some ideas today that you can use at home with your family. So there are over 200 parents registered for today's call. And so while we wait for other people to log in, we're just going to talk for a few minutes about hand in hand. And then we'll begin our teleseminar on the topic of helping children with fear. So I'm sure you guys know this, but just to reiterate, Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization. It's based in California, and it relies on donations from our generous supporters everywhere to make many of our programs and services like this one available to parents everywhere. We have a growing number of certified instructors from all over the world. I'm myself am based in the UK, and my co-presenter, Michelle, is based in New Jersey. Hand in Hand was founded about 30 years ago by Patty Wexler, who has a number of game-changing insights about the emotional needs of children based on many, many years of real-life experience. So Hand in Hand brings parents information, tools, and lots of support for this vital work of parenting. We know and understand that the work of nurturing children can't easily be done in isolation. And so Hand in Hand has a variety of offerings designed to support you. There are free articles on the website. There are lots of free teleseminars like this one. There's a free online discussion group where you can get ideas and write in with any questions that you may have. There's also free access to an inspiring blog with many parent success stories based on this approach. And as well as the free resources, Hand in Hand also offers podcasts, classes, and support groups, both in person and online. Intensive trainings for parents and professionals, and consultations for one-on-one support. So you can find all these resources through the Hand in Hand website. Hand in Hand's approach in all these offerings is called Parenting by Connection. And there are four main ideas behind this approach. So number one, we parents need and deserve support for the emotional challenge of parenting. We can build that support and therefore have so much more success in meeting both our own needs and our children's needs. Number two, our children are born to feel connected with us. This sense of connection is what they need in order to learn, to build friendships, to build resilience and confidence. All those things that we really want our children to have as they grow, the root of it all is a sense of connection. And number three, when children don't feel connected, what happens is that their behavior goes what we call off track. And they signal to us for help, and they signal to us in a variety of different ways, which we will touch on a little bit going forward. And number four, when we foster laughter and play, which we'll be talking a lot more in a little bit, when we set limits without harshness, and when we support our children to have good, hearty cries and tantrums as Michelle will be talking to you about in a little bit as well. This really helps our children feel more fully connected to us and helps them leave their difficult behaviors behind. So Parenting by Connection really aims to help parents strengthen and rebuild the parent-child connection so we can feel successful as we love our children, and so our children can thrive on the love we have for them as well. I think right now is probably the best time to give a little bit of a deeper introduction to myself, and then Michelle will go as well. And we'd like to tell you a little bit more about how we found this path of Parenting by Connection, and why we're so dedicated. We love it to bits. We can honestly say hand on heart, it's changed the way we parent. It's changed our family structure and our lives, really. And that's why we're here sharing this stuff with you, so that hopefully you can benefit from it too. So myself, I have two children. My son is 11 and my daughter is 9, and I'm based in England, UK. I came across Hand in Hand about 4 years ago, when all of a sudden my daughter went from being this confident, outgoing child who had no issues entering nursery and going to people's houses, etc. And then all of a sudden she became clingy. She went through a bout of separation anxiety. So she was fearful about so many things, but in particular about leaving me and trying things without my constant presence. It was really hard to see this change in my child, and even more so given that she was due to start reception, which is basically like kindergarten here at primary school. So looking online for help, I came across Patty Whitfield's article on separation anxiety, and I signed up to listen to a free teleseminar just like this one. And without knowing too much more, just by listening to that stuff and feeling really that it appealed to me and it made sense, I decided to start doing it at home. And when I did, and when I started working with her and connecting with her, I realized that something had clearly happened to put that fear in her, to scare her. And it was that fear in her body that was making it hard for her to think clearly and to realize that she was actually perfectly fine and safe, even when I wasn't around. When I did start using the tools, they worked really, really well. Almost like I tell everyone, they worked like magic. They worked in releasing her fear, and pretty soon she was back, comfortable at school, comfortable to places without me, comfortable to try new things. And literally, I haven't looked back since. So I signed up to take my starter class, and then decided that I really would love to share this with the community around me, and I went on to do this certification training. And that's what brings me here today. So I'm really looking forward to sharing these tools with you, which have been invaluable in my life and have really helped both my daughter work through her fears, but have also helped me with my son as well and brought us to where we are today. And before I tell you a little bit more, Michelle is going to introduce herself a little bit more as well and tell you all about fear. So Michelle, over to you.
Great. Thanks, Shaheen. So I'm Michelle Coquel, and I live in northern New Jersey. I've been a hand-in-hand instructor and consultant for about 7 years now. I have a 13-year-old daughter and a 10-year-old son, and I first found out about hand-in-hand parenting when my son was 3 years old. He'd had some very difficult early experiences. He'd lived in an orphanage for a year, and he was dealing with a lot of fear and anger. And the parenting tools that I had that had worked so well with my daughter just didn't feel like they were enough to reach him. I knew he needed me, and I did not know how to help him. And I researched and researched and researched and luckily stumbled upon Hand in Hand. And I remember after the first in-person class I took, coming home and just having this sense of relief that, you know, finally, here was something that might allow things to change for the better. As I learned more about the listening tools, I found that slowly but surely, I was starting to build, you know, a strengthened sense of connection with my son, and he felt a strengthened sense of connection with me too. Over time, Hand in Hand really did transform our relationship, And like Shaheen mentioned, in her family, you know, it wasn't just the relationship between my son and I that changed. My daughter and the relationship between my daughter and I, which had been strong all along, became even stronger and remains stronger to this day. You know, I can honestly say that I have a teenager that I love to spend time with. It just keeps getting better and better. So that, with that introduction, let's dive into talking about fears. So today, Shaheen and I are going to talk with you about ways that you can help your children work through the fears that they carry so that they can face the world with confidence. All children feel frightened sometimes, and many fears serve a useful purpose, to keep us safe. But sometimes we might find that our children's struggles are persistent. You might find that they're anxious in certain situations, and it's really difficult to reassure them no matter what you say. Or else you might have a child who's terrified of an everyday task, like having their hair washed or brushing their teeth. You might have a child that avoids specific places, you know, shopping malls or the swimming pool, or else they insist that they have to leave the park if they see any sort of insect. Sometimes parents have a reasonable guess about where the fear comes from, and other times it's hard or impossible for parents to know what exactly has prompted a fear that your child holds. But either way, whether you know where it came from or not, our children generally let us know when they feel scared. The way that they communicate that fear is sometimes obvious and sometimes subtle. So, you know, they might find it hard to say goodbye when it's time for us to go to work in the morning, or they might not want to participate in activities with other children. Or they might find it impossible to go to sleep at night unless you're in the room with them. Some children suck their thumbs, some children bite their nails, and some frightened children lash out. They get angry, they refuse to cooperate, they cry, they scream, they rage. And when this happens, sometimes parents don't know that it's fear that's driving the behavior. It can get really confusing. Sometimes children are impossible to please. It's very hard to make things feel right for them. Other times, children move quickly from one activity to another. And, you know, it might look like they just can't pay attention, but sometimes this is motivated by a child trying to avoid having to notice how frightened they feel deep down. So the constant motion is an attempt to avoid having to face those feelings. Other children work very, very hard to control their environments and frequently work very, very hard to control their parents in an attempt to help themselves feel safe. So it's important to realize from the outset that frightened children don't always look like they're afraid. The good news is that you can help. Whatever the fear that they carry, however it landed on them, and however they express it, you can help them recover their sense of security and self-confidence. For the rest of this call, Shaheen and I are going to talk about specific listening tools that you can use to help your child work through the fear that limits them. The hand-to-hand approach, as many of you know, is based on the insight that when children feel a sense of connection with a trusted parent or caregiver, the safety that you bring them allows them to utilize a natural healing process. And with your support, they can do just what they need to do, dip into whatever feelings they have that are making it difficult to do whatever it is where they get hung up. So if it's impossible to contemplate having you pour water over their head, or if it's hard to relax their hold on your shirt and peek out at their teacher, or if it feels impossible for them to fall asleep without you in the room with them, whatever it is, children can shed their fears through laughter, through crying, trembling, sometimes struggling, with a parent or other caring adult there to support them and keep them safe. So when you decide to listen to your child, really listen to them, not just to a verbal explanation of what they're thinking or feeling, but to stay with them as they show you where things get hard and how hard it feels for them, that's when your child will be able to shed their tension and recover their sense that all is well. So this is hard work. Many of you have or have tried this process, it's hard. And it's partly because of the feelings that our children's feelings kick up in us. When they're frightened by something that doesn't seem like a big deal, or if they're hesitant to engage in something that feels really safe, we might be able to feel empathetic at first, but at some point, you know, you might find that your patience gives out and you start to feel irritated. Other times, you might find that you're consciously or unconsciously enabling your children to avoid what frightens them. This might make your day easier, but until they actually face the fear and offload some of it, when they don't have the opportunity to work through the fear they carry, the trouble, the behavior issues, what they're afraid of, it keeps coming back again and again and again. When our children are angry and they're expressing their fear by, you know, through aggression or through, you know, being very angry with us, we can find that we get angry ourselves. So listening to children isn't easy, and especially not easy when you're new to it. So Shaheen's going to start by talking about ways for you to set yourself up for doing this type of emotional work. And then she'll move into talking about harnessing the power of play to help children begin to work through their fears. All right, Shaheen?
Great. Thank you. Thanks, Michelle. So as Michelle indicated, literally the first that we take when we are starting to help our children with their fears is you turn towards yourself. You turn inward. So first and foremost, it is firstly important to work on ourselves. We as parents can help our children work on their fears and get back to a place. However, like Michelle said, to do this, we need to be in a place where we can listen well. So when our children get scared, it triggers a whirlwind of emotions in ourselves. We may get angry. So, for example, it's such a simple thing asking them to do. Why do they always make a big deal of it? We may get frustrated, especially when we look around and the keeping up with the Joneses syndrome kicks in. So everybody else's kids are fine. Why is mine so scared of this teddy or, you know, going to sleep at night? So we may often get sad as well. We may blame ourselves for what have I done to make my child so fearful? Why is my child so scared? Is it something I have done? In such situations, one thing that's really important to remember is that our children are picking up on our emotional state. We all have something called mirror neurons within us. So these mirror neurons do exactly what they sound like. They mirror the feelings and emotional states of the people around us. So this is why sometimes we may pick up a negative vibe from somebody. Or why we say that somebody who is stressed is stressing us out as well, or bringing the mood down. Similarly, our children are mirroring us as parents. And if we are not feeling calm and secure, then no matter how much we will try and tell them that there's nothing to be scared about, honey, they won't feel it and they won't be reassured. In this amazing book, it's called The Opposite of Worry. It's a book I highly recommend when you want to learn more about fears and anxiety in children. Author Dr. Larry Cohen gives a perfect opening example for this. And I think I'm going to share it because it really helps get that visual understanding of why we need to work on ourselves first. He talks about his 8th grade science experiment, where he looked at the fear and recovery cycle of some chicks that he was taking care of. Now, many animals play dead when they're scared, when they're too scared, rather, for the fight and flight instinct. It's known as the freeze. Because they know that the chances of a predator, for example, a hawk in the case of chickens, a hawk won't eat them unless they're alive. It's very unlikely that they'll eat a dead chicken. So when the chicks are just a few days old, what he did was he picked up a chick and he stared into one little eye, trying to imagine how a hawk would look at a chicken. After he let it go, the chick lay dead. It stayed immobilized for about a minute, and then it popped back up and started walking around again, having recovered from his fear. The next time what he did was he immobilized two chicks at once, and what he noted was that they stayed down for much longer than when immobilized alone. So this time they stayed down for 5 minutes. He tried it again with just the one and saw that again the chick popped up after a few seconds. So he realized that when a frightened chicken looks to a second chicken to see if it's safe. When the second chicken is walking around fine, it signals, hey, all is well, it must be safe to walk around. However, when the second chicken is immobilized as well, it compounds the fear. So they might be thinking, well, I don't see an actual hawk, but the second chicken must be one since it hasn't gotten up yet, so I had better stay down. In another study done by Professor, I think his name is Dr. Gallup, he found that when a scared chicken looks in the mirror, again, they stay immobilized really for a long time because they see the image of another scared chicken, which adds to their... Now, moving this example on to children, we can now perhaps see why it's essential that the work starts with us. Our children will be looking to us as their second chicken. And when we have feelings of fear, for example, when we're leaving them for the first time in the nursery, or when we're sending them off into the pool when our own experience of the water was not the best and was scary, these feelings will be picked up by them and no amount of verbal reassurances will be able to help. So it's really important that we take some time out to talk to someone who can listen to you for a time without any advice or judgment. In this time, we talk about how we feel about the fear and what we feel like doing when it takes over our children or even when it takes over us. We look out for the thoughts that make us laugh or make us cry and we stay with those, allowing ourselves to release any pent-up feelings. Now, this tool is what we call listening time. And it's this listening work that will allow you to then stay calm and rational when the situation arises again, rather than be carried over by our own feelings. It's this that will then allow us to act on the next few suggestions, for example, that we're going to give you, because you'll be able to absorb it fully rather than the fear kind of taking over. And so you will be able to proactively put these suggestions, these tools into place, rather than react towards your child in the same old patterns over and over again, possibly even adding to the fears that they have already built up. Now, this work on ourselves is not just done once and finish. It's done regularly. It's done often, especially as you start implementing these tools that we'll be covering today. We need to have a regular place to go where we can work on our own fears, our own worries, or emotions, just to have a space to share how hard it all is and release any feelings to prevent being open. So that's a very brief introduction to the tool of listening time. I'm now going to talk about, once hopefully we have someone where we can release with or talk to, we'll now be able to work on another tool, which is called play listening. But just before I talk about play listening, I do want to mention that these tools that we are mentioning, there are six really tools in parenting by connection, and today we'll talk about three of them. But also, we will only be touching briefly on them. And I highly, highly recommend that you either, you know, look these tools up, take a class, or do something to learn the rest of the tools, because when they work together, that's when you will have the best effects. But just to remind you that this is just an introduction, and hopefully to get you started on this journey of care. So as Michelle mentioned, laughter and tears and trembling are part of the healing. And Michelle will talk to you shortly about helping our children release these fears through tears and trembling, but I'd like to talk about laughter. Play is one of the most powerful ways to help by releasing through this laughter. Now, we call this tool play listening. What happens when a child has fears is often because of the fears, they do understand that, you know, their fears are different to perhaps other children and they can't do, for example, that they know that they are the ones who are crying at nursery the most, that they pick these things up. And it often leaves the children feeling small and uncertain. And what play does, what playful games do, is help them rebuild this confidence and trust in themselves. So play listening, essentially, is following your child's laughter. So, for example, if something makes your child giggle, what we tend to do is we have a laugh, but we move on. However, in play listening, we follow the laughter, so we repeat the funny thing that was said or done, and we encourage more and more laughter. Laughter is also a great way to connect you with your child. As they say, laughter is the shortest. And the best thing, however, about play is that it can actually be geared towards the fears in particular to help laughter around the the fear and the scary thing. And this in particular helps release the fear. So I'll now share a few ideas on how to do this. Role reversal is one great way to address light fears, especially with younger children. The role reversal is where you are the scared one, and your child is the strong, confident one in charge. The one fun way, for example, to do this is to boast loudly that nothing can scare you. You are unscarable. Then, when your little one pushes you slightly or perhaps jumps out at you from behind the closet door, you shriek with fear and hide behind the nearest stuffed toy. And this will promote lots and lots, lots of laughter. I remember, for example, when we were going through my daughter's fear of separation, we had this parrot puppet. So we named him Super Parrot. And Super Parrot would often come out, and he would say he's not scared of anything. And then the smallest noise or the smallest boo that what my daughter would do would send him scurrying under the blanket or screaming at the top of his, a.k.a. my voice. And I found this really, really helpful with her. Released lots of giggles and laughter around whatever she was scared about. Roughhousing is also another wonderful way to help children. So what is roughhousing? Roughhousing is defined as to engage in uproarious or rowdy play. Basically, it allows children to release physical energy in a safe way. It promotes lots of laughter, which allows the release of feelings of fear, and it promotes a sense of deep connection with the person that they're playing with. So, and it can also fit in really well with role reversal. So a child can be the one, for example, to knock you over in a pillow fight. Or he's the one who pushes you off the bed when you're wrestling as you just can't get strong enough. And he or she can find their own power and their confidence really soars. Many parents, however, often struggle with roughhousing, as it often wasn't the way they were played with, and so it can be a trigger. However, it also can be that parents just don't know where to start. How can I roughhouse, for example? You can't really wrestle with a two-year-old, or maybe your child is too old. There's a really good book called The Art of Roughhousing, Good Old-Fashioned Horseplay and Why Every Kid Needs It. And it was done by the same author, Larry Cohen, and his co-author, Anthony DeBenedict. And I love this book because it doesn't only go into the benefits of roughhousing and how it helps confidence, but it also outlines over 100 fun exercises to try at home. And the exercises are age-appropriate, that gives you some ideas to try for a three-year-old, a four-year-old. Now, another way of play listening, and it sounds like an upside-down thing to do, but it's to replay the scary event, or to change an aspect of it, to make it funny, or even just allow the ending. So, for example, in my situation, when my daughter was going through her separation anxiety, one of the things she really hated for me to do was to leave her, even with her dad. Now, previously, before her separation anxiety hit, I would go for Saturdays, for example, to study in the city. She'd be with her dad all day, no problem. And then all of a sudden, even to go out on a Tuesday evening for a class would be a massive issue with lots of tears and lots of fear coming up. So, and we found the handover pretty hard in terms of she would really refuse to stay with her dad. So we tried to replay this, but to change the ending. So what I did was we got around the bed, and I had obviously told my husband, okay, this is what we're going to try and do. So he was all in, and we got my other son busy doing something else, so we could purely focus on her. And what I did was, okay, it's time for me to go now, and I lifted her up, and I started to hand her over to her dad. But then at the last minute, I pulled her back and I said, no, I really can't let you go. No, 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 I really just want to keep you close to me. And she started giggling, so we knew we were on the right track. And we did this again. We picked her up and, okay, now it's time for you to go to your dad. No, I can't leave you. And I pull her back and hold her really close to me. Now, we were doing this around the bed, so as we did this more and more, it kind of expanded. So she'd be running around the bed. I'd be running around trying to get her back. And, you know, she'd pretend herself to walk over to her dad, and then at the last minute come around to me, and there were giggles all around. And then we actually managed to switch it around. So she went, it was her dad's turn to then say, okay, I'm going to give you to mom. And she would lean over to me, and at the last minute pull herself back and go to her dad, or run around and just trick me. So there was a lot of role reversal as well, where she was the clever one who would outmaneuver us and manage to get back to the parent who was. After we did this for about 15, 20 minutes, lots and lots of laughter. And then when I said, okay, I really do have to go now, there was maybe a little bit of an, aw, do you? Okay, bye. And it was totally fine. And after that, we never had an issue about me leaving for my Tuesday evening class at all. So that's just one example of how play listening, which includes role reversal and lots of laughter and changing the ending of a possibly scary situation, really helps release the fear. And the other great thing is that when we connect with our children through play, it's really a strong way to also keep their sense of closeness alive. So not only does it allow for the release of fear, it also prevents the behavior that can otherwise emerge that was mentioned earlier, for example, the aggression. It can be preventative as well. If you are looking for playful ideas to try and help your children with their fears, I really suggest having a look on the Hand in Hand website. There are many, many ideas on there, from playful ways to deal with separation anxiety, to fear of wasps, to going to bed at night, and much more. So that was just a very quick roundup on the tool of play listening. I'd just like to add here that play is really good to help release lighter fears. However, sometimes our children do face deeper fears around issues, fears that won't necessarily be fully released through laughter. However, what play will do in these situations, it will help loosen things up. It will help build a sense of deep safety with the parents, which will then allow them to cry and cry fully, where perhaps they weren't able to cry before because it was too hard to think about, or because they, and Michelle will now tell you more about the power of these tears. So, Michelle?
Thank you, Shaheen. So let's move away from play just for a little bit. And as Shaheen said, we'll now move into talking about how to work with children when they're, you know, in a different way. So children's fears might have their roots in any number of early experiences. And sometimes parents have an idea of what those might be, and sometimes they don't. So it could be anything from a difficult birth, separation from a primary caregiver, an accident, an illness. Witnessing their parents' anger can make a lasting impression on your children. And sometimes it's not even obvious that your child's behavior has anything to do with having been frightened, especially when years may have passed between whatever incident it was that scared them and the way that their fear is expressed through their behavior. So to illustrate this, I'm going to tell you an anecdote that Patty Whipler, the founder of Hand in Hand, tells about a mom who used a listening partnership to put things together for herself and then to move on and help her daughter work through a specific fear. So this story is about a 2-year-old named Catherine who was terrified of having her teeth brushed. Night after night, when they would, you know, do the bedtime routine and her mom would take her to the bathroom, as soon as the toothbrush came out, Catherine would have a fit. She would scream, she'd arch her back, she'd flail her arms and legs around, and she did not want her mom to brush her teeth. And her mom was feeling at her wit's end by the situation. She knew that she couldn't not stop brushing her daughter's teeth. You know, she cared about her daughter's teeth being healthy. But at the same time, she felt really bad about the way her daughter responded when the toothbrush came out. It felt like she was hurting her daughter. She didn't want to hurt her, but she had no idea really how to get this toothbrushing situation to go well. So she came to Hand in Hand, and she started talking about the situation in a listening partnership. And she remembered that her daughter was a peaceful baby. She'd had an easy birth. She'd always felt like they were pretty well connected. Things in general tended to go well. It was just the toothbrushing situation that was difficult for them. And as she talked, she remembered something that had happened when Catherine was about 7 months old, and that is that while her mom was cradling her in her arms, Her mom was also drinking a cup of tea, and the tea spilled, and Catherine got burned. They took her to the hospital. She was taken away by the medical team, and she eventually recovered fully, but it had been a difficult experience all around. When the mom remembered this incident, there was a complete shift in her understanding of what was going on, and what had been so frustrating to her started to take on a new meaning. So rather than, why on earth is my child afraid of the toothbrush, she's acting like I'm torturing her and it feels awful, she thought to herself, of course, when I try to put the toothbrush in her mouth, it might bring up the feelings of people moving in close to her to do things to her body that were painful and frightening. You know, no wonder she's scared. For Catherine, the feelings that she'd been holding on to since she was 7 months old came up for her every time her mom tried to brush her teeth. So even though, you know, in the present, when she was 2.5, she was perfectly safe with her mom at home in the bathroom together, the experience that she had had as a baby was lodged in her emotional memory. It wasn't the toothbrushing itself that scared her. The toothbrushing served as a pretext that re-stimulated her stored feelings of fear. And this is fairly common, and it actually makes a lot of sense when you think about the way that memory works. And I just want to talk about this briefly. So emotional memory, sometimes called implicit memory, is present from birth. And it's different from narrative memory in that it's not attached to any sort of conscious recall of specific events. So even though you don't remember it as a story in words, implicit memories are capable of flooding us with feelings when they get activated. And many of us are familiar with this sort of things happening too. Anytime you can look back and realize that you've had what feels like an automatic, outsized emotional response to something that happens in the present day that you might later realize was really more or less benign, that's the work of an implicit memory. So if you can remember this when your children are off track, and even when you behave in ways that you later regret, it helps you to trust how you're feeling, and it helps you to trust what your children are showing you, even if you don't understand it or where it comes from at first. Children try to look okay on the outside. They use a lot of energy trying to function in the world and keep the feelings they're holding on to deep down inside. And that's one of the reasons why they can start to avoid whatever it is that stirs up the feelings, even if it doesn't seem to be directly related. That's why they resist so strongly when you make the slightest suggestion that they might be fine, you know, going into the pool or, you know, falling asleep on their own. If you insist that whatever you'd like to happen needs to happen, like Catherine's mom and her toothbrushing, or if the fear is attached to something that a child can't avoid, things can get rocky, like the toothbrush tantrums. The thing is that it's not just a behavior issue. A lot of parents look at it as a behavior issue, and that's not just what it is. It's an opportunity to help your child offload their fear so that rather than, you know, soldiering through what's hard and teaching them how to do that, they can release the fear that's driving whatever, you know, the behavior, and they can move through the world in a much freer, more relaxed way. So when children go off track with tantrums or expressions of anger or with aggression, when they're oppositional, parents tend to respond by focusing on the behavior. And the usual goal is to make the behavior stop somehow. Parents communicate this in lots of different ways. You know, sometimes parents might focus on teaching their child how to calm down. Some parents distract their child with a video or a treat. Some parents threaten their children about what will happen if they don't calm down. Children are punished when they act out in anger. Parents withdraw, go into a timeout and I'll be with you when you're ready to talk in a nice voice. The problem is that while all these things can stop the upset in the moment, it doesn't allow a child to release the fear. It just serves to drive the fear deeper inside, and perhaps worst of all, it leaves your child to manage the fear on their own. The message children usually get when we try to turn off their upsets is that when I'm really hurting, you don't want me. I'm on my own. And that's a hard feeling for a child to have. You know, they learn to keep the hurts hidden as best they can because they really want their parents to approve of them. But the problem is that unless they have help releasing the fears, the feelings that are driving the off-track behavior stay as strong as ever, and the behavior pops up again and again and again. So what's the alternative? The alternative is to pause in your own mind and to realize that at that moment when your child is melting down over something like toothbrushing, she's doing that not to make you crazy, but because she's overwhelmed, she's confused, and she's feeling out of control. And it's a powerful moment that you can use to help her. And the way that we teach parents to help their children in moments like these is called stay listening. So in stay listening, you respond to your child not by trying to get her to behave or getting mad at her or asking her to calm down or reminding her of all the tools she can use to calm herself down, but by moving close to her and listening to her. If you need to stop the off-track behavior, if she's being aggressive, you stop that to keep everyone safe. You keep yourself safe. You keep her safe. So you're not allowing the off-track behavior. You're limiting the behavior, but you're allowing the feelings. You don't negotiate. You don't fix anything. You just focus on being with your child and listening. And again, you're not listening. You're not asking them questions to try to get them to talk their way through whatever's upsetting them. You're focusing on just being with them and whatever it is they're showing you. So as you're listening, you hold out the expectation that the scary thing that can happen and your child will find their way through. So, you know, in Catherine's case, her mom would say, "Sweetie, it's time to brush your teeth." And then when Catherine started screaming and flailing and arching, her mom would just stay close and listen. As simple as that. Many parents, when they first start stay listening, have a hope in the back of their mind that when they're warm and understanding, when their child's upset, that it will reassure them and the, you know, crisis will be averted. But that's not what usually happens, and it's also not the point. The point is that when you focus on connecting with your child, the safety of you is what allows their fear to move closer to the surface and then start to release. And while that fear is releasing, it's not a pretty sight. You know, your child looks frightened. They might look terrified. They'll scream, they'll arch, they'll fight. But all you have to do is remind yourself that the present moment is safe. You know they can make it through to the other side, and then you just stay close and listen. You don't want to say very much when you're stay listening. If anything, you want to say things like, "I'm right here, I'm keeping you safe." But you want to project, mostly in nonverbal ways, your confidence, your patience, and just to give your child the time to process the feelings. When you ride episodes like this all the way through, your child's able to release those feelings, and her mind will be able to coordinate itself again, minus the tension. So in Catherine's case, it didn't happen, like in Shaheen's story, with one episode of play listening. She had to listen a few times over the course of a week, but after that, Catherine was ready to open her mouth and have her teeth brushed. And let's see. I am going to cut what I wanted to say short because we're running out of time and I want to make sure I leave time for questions. So suffice it to say that, you know, when you support them so they can work through, you know, whatever fear, whatever hurt they carry, they can be more fully themselves. They can be freer. They can be more grounded. They're not having to protect themselves from hard feelings that remind them of the fear. And also, as Shaheen spoke about, it will almost certainly bring up all sorts of difficult feelings in you when you start to do this or when you even think about doing this. For many people, stay listening is the hardest listening tool to use. But try to stick with it, experiment, and remember that your child will have to manage the same huge, messy feelings on their own until they get to work through it in a safe place with your support. When you stay with them and support them as they do what they need to do, you'll get to witness their healing process that puts their thinking back together again. And usually what happens is once you manage to stay with an upset all the way through, you'll see how relaxed, relieved, and regulated your child feels afterwards. And after that, it gets much easier. So stay listening is hard, but it lets you stop lecturing. It lets you stop reminding. It lets you stop saying the same thing 20 times to get your child to comply. You don't have to dance around things that upset them day to day in order to keep things calm in your family. When you support them through both with laughter and with stay listening, they'll be able to work through their fears, regain their confidence, and feel more at ease in their lives. All right, so let's stop there for now, and I would like to answer your questions. So, like I said earlier, a number of people wrote in questions, but if anyone who is here with us on the call would like to ask something, if you press star 2 on your phone, we will be able to see you raising your hand, and we will unmute your line, and you can ask your question. So if anyone has anything to ask, please press star 2.
I see a few hands up there.
All right. Let's go with the first person, and you are someone whose last four digits is 3359. Hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Great.
I just had a question about intervening with aggression directed at a sibling.
Yep.
And how does the stay listening happen in that circumstance? I end up physically restraining the child who's hitting. It's actually twins, 2 6-year-olds.
Mm.
But then, I don't know, it doesn't always feel right to restrain arms or,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it gets to crying and stuff, but then I don't know if that's the hand-in-hand way or if that's getting confused.
Yeah,
so
it's a really, really, really good question. And so many people, when they're first starting out with hand-in-hand and stay listening in particular, have that same question. So I'm glad you asked it. So the most important thing to do, I mean, your job as a parent is to keep everybody safe. And if one of your children is trying to hurt another child or trying to hurt you or trying to hurt your partner, you need to stop that from happening, you know, as best you can. And in terms of, you know, stopping that from happening and stay listening, it really is, you know, a matter of looking, you know, taking a moment just to think about where your mind is at. If you're feeling angry, if you're feeling like you want to punish them, if you're feeling, you know, anything other than supportive and warm toward your child, it's probably best not to hold on to them in any way. But if you're feeling very calm and very grounded, what you want to do is just very gently throw a hand around them and just say, honey, I'm here to keep you safe. I can't let you hurt your brother. And if, boys or girls?
You got it, boys. Yeah.
Boys, right. So if, you know, I'm not going to let you hurt your brother, and if he starts to cry, that's all you need to do. Just kind of parry his blows. If he hits you, it lets you know that he needs your help. It's a way of showing you he's asking for help. When he's regulated, he knows that your family, you know, you don't want people to be hurting each other. You don't have to use that moment to teach him that lesson. You can just use that moment to stay with him and let him show you just how horrible he feels. And it can be confusing because it can look like he really wants to hurt someone, but it's really being driven by a sense of fear. That's the best he can figure out to do in the moment. So it's not a time for teaching. It's not a time for negotiation. It's not a time for trying to turn him off. If you can use your body to keep everyone safe and stay with him while he cries or while he's angry, if you can do that, he'll probably get through it to the point where he can break down in tears. And, you know, the healing process can proceed from there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, sure. Great. Thank you. Okay. And let's see. Someone whose last four digits are 9300.
That might be me. Is that me?
That is you. Yes.
Okay, good. Hi, thank you for taking my question. I'm pretty new at this, and so I have a follow-up question to the teeth brushing scenario. In my situation, it's actually more about the shampooing, but in the stay listening, when you've described how the mom would just kind of stay and be with her, I hate to ask this question, but do the teeth then get brushed at the end of that? Is that the idea that the emotions come out and then the teeth brushing can occur once that's all cleared out?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So once your child can feel, can regain their sense of connection with you, right, once you've, you sort of have to sort of let go of your goal for the time being. So it's not as though, you know, by going through this process, you're going to give up on ever brushing their teeth or give up on ever washing their hair. But you kind of back off from your goal in the moment. Like in the moment, we tend to just hyper-focus on the goal. Right? And it turns into a power struggle. You know, I need to wash your hair. No, I won't let you. So rather than getting involved in that, you back off and you listen, or you can play. You know, what Shaheen talked about with the play can be really powerful in these situations as well. So you could, you said it's shampooing that's the problem?
Yeah, it's shampooing and sometimes brushing of the hair.
Brushing of the hair. So, you know, you could talk to the brush and have a conversation with the brush, or the brush could really want to brush your child's hair. And then you could say, no, no, you know, he doesn't want you to brush his hair. You can't do that. And the brush would say, but I really want to brush his hair. And if he can laugh about it, go with the laughter. So it's usually, you know, especially when you first start working on these things, trying to find the laughter can really help. And if it doesn't clear up on its own, as in Shaheen's story, it does pave the way for stay listening later on. You know, so that's one thing you can try, is to then watch, like, try to brush your own hair and then, you know, shrink into the corner of the room saying, ouch, that hurts, I don't like that. Or, you know, anything that you do that makes him smile or laugh, do more of that. So that's a good first step. And then, you know, and then focus on stay listening and being with, and you'll be surprised. You know, treat it as an experiment. Stay listen all the way through and then see how your child is on the other end. See how they are. See what they accept. You can keep proposing. You know, it's time to brush your hair now. And if he cries more, if he jumps right back into another big cry, let that happen. And if it tends to happen, you know, in the morning right before school, you might want to set it up so that you can, you know, brush his hair when he comes home from school, just so that you don't have any time pressure. So you don't feel that extra urgency of, but we're going to be late to school if this doesn't happen. Or if it tends to, the shampooing tends to happen around bedtime, start bedtime an hour early that night, so that if you have to go into sort of a long, you know, play listening or stay listening session, you don't feel like, oh no, he's going to stay up too late, he'll be cranky in the morning. So you can think about it, and the listening partnership's a great place to do that, and set it up so you have, you know, the best chance of success that you can.
This is amazing. Thank you so much.
Great. And Shaheen, do you want to add anything to that?
Well, I was thinking, yeah, the play idea would be ideal here. But I did want to just add a little thing to the first question, and that is sometimes it's really helpful to think about what fears might be underlying the arguments between the six-year-old or the aggression that might be coming up. And I think for me personally, knowing that it's not necessarily the brothers not really liking each other or, you know, not getting along, the roots of them could be the fear of, for example, love in your eyes. You know, every sibling wants to be number one in their parents' eyes or feel like they're fully loved. And so that sibling rivalry often is a case of those kind of fears manifesting in aggression or annoying each other. And then the other thing I was just going to suggest in terms of play ideas for the siblings and the twins especially is there's a list on the Hand in Hand Parenting website which gives 15 playful ideas to help solve sibling rivalry, including aggression. Things like, for example, if there is hitting going on and you do have to, you know, intervene, and like you said, Michelle, if you are feeling like you are in the right place and in a playful mood, then something as simple as, oh, I'm coming to chase you, I'm coming to chase you, and then having a game of chase with the person who is perhaps more aggressive or hitting at that time, or, you know, getting some roughhousing in at that time with perhaps both of the siblings is a really great way to release any pent-up feelings as well. So just check out that there's a link. I'll try and find the actual title for you, but I think it's just 15 playful ways to solve sibling rivalry, and that might be helpful for playful ideas as well in there.
Great. Okay, let's see. We are running out of time, but let's just take maybe one more. Let's see. Someone whose last four digits are 1581.
That will be me.
Hi.
Hey, thank you. I have a question about roughhousing versus rough hands, because sometimes when I try to roughhouse with my little 5-year-old boy, he will stop and say, "No, Mommy, I don't want to use rough hands," which is what he learns at school. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he works on, could you help me sort of figure out what I might be doing wrong or how to do roughhousing differently?
Yeah, and it's such a good question. Shaheen, do you want to say something first here, or do you want me to go ahead?
My first thought was it is something that they're picking up at school and, you know, it seems too rough, then perhaps starting with the lighter kind of plays, the lighter kind of roughhousing moves, so not necessarily going in for the wrestling or, you know, something like that, but maybe taking out some socks and having a sock fight and getting, like, some soft pillows and doing, you know, very gentle kind of pillow fights and then building it up slowly. But not the only thing is that sometimes we get scared and we think, oh, no, this is too much for them. I think the one thing I'd say is don't give up. You know, roughhousing has so many benefits. And if they are getting the sense of, oh, my gosh, it's too rough hands, et cetera, then to find other ways around that, which might not be so intense, but can still get the physical element of play and the laughter going as well. But Michelle, I'd love to hear if there's anything else you want to add to that too.
Yeah, I think that's great, you know, and I think what Shaheen said, you know, don't give up. It's so important. You know, he's trying so hard. What that's letting you know is he's trying so hard to behave. He's trying so hard to do the right thing. You know, he's being pulled to play in this way, and he's not letting himself go there. It doesn't feel safe because he's worried that he's going to do something to make you or his teachers angry, right? So he's already gotten the message that I need to be careful, right? If I behave this way, people won't be pleased with me. So like Shaheen said, if you can sort of ease into it, and I think the best, you know, he might, like telling him, oh, this is okay, honey, it probably won't work. But as you're easing into the play, the more delighted that you can be with him and the more you can express that to him, again, nonverbally, like so really try to show him that you're having fun with him. You know, you're not waiting for him to make a wrong move so you can come down hard on him and shut him down. You're open, you're curious, you know, you're working together, you know, and as you play with him in that way, he'll be able to relax a little bit and let himself go there with you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure, great. Okay, so unfortunately, a bunch more people have questions, but we're not going to have time to get to them all. But before we end for today, I would just like to give you guys some ideas about where you can get those questions answered. I mean, any question you have is a good one. And any question you have will probably benefit. A lot of other parents probably want to hear the answer to that question. So let me talk a little bit just here at the end about where you can, like what your next steps can be. But first, So if you'd like to learn more, there are a lot of resources on the Hand in Hand website. So the articles we have are searchable. So if you're interested in roughhousing, you can put roughhousing in as a search term either in the article section or in the blog and come up with a whole bunch of things to read about roughhousing. If your issue is bedtime, you can plug in bedtime and hear and come up with a lot of stories and a lot of articles about bedtime. We also run a Yahoo discussion group that's moderated by instructors. There are over 2,000 families on that discussion group, and if you join there, people write in with questions just like the ones that some of you got a chance to ask today, and you can hear back from certified hand-in-hand instructors as well as get support and interesting ideas from the community. There's also a Facebook page if you prefer Facebook to a Yahoo discussion group. And it will let you be part of this community of like-minded parents that are on this parenting journey together. We also offer one-on-one consultations with experienced instructors. So if you feel like you would benefit from having a safe place to talk about what's going on for you and for your family and to receive support as well as new ideas for how to move things forward, setting up a one-on-one consultation could be a good thing to do. We also have some self-guided classes. So with these, when you sign up for these classes, and it doesn't cost very much, I don't remember exactly how much, but when you sign up for these classes, you get video classes about different topics. So the same way we talked today about fears, you get basically a video class about a topic. There's one about separation anxiety that might be relevant to a lot of you on the call today. There's one about helping children sleep. There's taming sibling rivalry. There's one about setting limits and building cooperation. And there's another one about helping your child with aggression. So that's another option. And finally, we offer an instructor-led 6-week-long class called a starter class, which is really a wonderful, comprehensive introduction to hand-in-hand parenting. And again, you'll have access to class videos, different class videos than from the topic-driven classes. But you also have a weekly support call with an instructor and the same small group of parents. So it's a great way to experience listening time and listening partnerships and also to look for a listening partner for yourself. And both Shaheen and I are leading 6 starter classes in the upcoming weeks. Mine starts next Thursday, October 27th. And right now there's a discount code for $75 off if you use the word cooperation when you sign up. So if you're interested, you get a little break. So before I pass it off to Shaheen, I just want to thank all of you for joining us today. Thank you for your thoughtfulness. Thank you for all the hard work you do each and every day to help your children thrive. Glad you're here with us. And Shaheen?
Yep, thanks, Michelle. So my next online starter class begins on Wednesday, the 2nd of November. And as Michelle says, it lasts for 6 weeks and you get access to videos and reading material. The videos are done by Patty and she explains each tool in her amazing and unique way. I just love that Hand in Hand has such a wide range of things to offer because it really is out there to suit every kind of parent and schedule and routine out there, so you can choose what works for you and follow that, hopefully. I'd just like to echo Michelle and say thank you very much for joining us. We hope you find this useful, and we look forward to getting to know you a little bit more as you go down this journey through the discussion groups and Facebook and everything else that's out there. So once again, thank you and goodbye.
Take care, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us. Hand in Hand is here to help you get the support you need for your work as a parent. To download podcasts on additional parenting topics, go to handinhandparenting.org/store. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.